Welcome to the Money Advantage Podcast, empowering business owners with the permission to think differently about money so that you can consciously choose to live a meaningful and fulfilled life now. Our passion is making money simple, fun, and doable, helping you feel great about your money and getting your money working for you so you can thrive. Hi, and welcome back to the Money Advantage Podcast. We are your hosts, Bruce Wehner and Rachel Marshall. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, Bruce. It is so great to be here talking with you today.
Yes, I think our listeners are going to really get a lot of value in this podcast because the last few podcasts, you were getting to know us and why we're doing things. Now we're actually going to talk about things that we actually do with our clients, our business owners, in today's episode of Abundance, Philosophy, Principles, and Beliefs. Rachel, go ahead and talk about the principles, philosophies, and beliefs about money that you take your clients through.
Awesome. So at this time, before we really get started, I want to share with you something another one of my mentors shared with me and taught me a couple of years ago. And this is really helpful in any conversation or any dialogue where two people are involved, because there's always multiple perspectives and we're all coming with our own mindset and beliefs and ways of thinking. And so I want to just share this with you as we lead into the conversation today. So there's very few facts in life. There's a lot of interpretations. A lot of times we have people that will treat their interpretations of facts as if they are the facts themselves. And so what that results in is what we call your map. So you have a map of how you have interpreted the facts of your life. And I have my own map of how I've interpreted the facts of my life. So what we recognize is that my map is my interpretation. It's not necessarily the truth. And your map is your interpretation, not necessarily the truth. So what I want all of us to become aware of in this conversation is that we all have blind spots, in that our map is not the whole territory of something. And so in the context of this conversation, where there's 7 billion people on the planet and they all have a map, no one person is going to have the same perspective and way of thinking that you do. So that's your belief system. Everything you already know in your life is on your map. Nothing new for you exists on your map. So the only opportunity that you have to learn something new is to have a willingness to get off of your map and onto someone else's. And that's how the learning process can happen. And that's the removing of our defenses and being willing and open to considering something outside of our map. So
yeah, I believe that's very similar to what Tom Mickler, who I believe you know also, for our listeners, Tom Mickler is actually a full-time psychologist that we employ at E3 Wealth Consultants, not only for our clients, but also for everybody that works in the organization. And he calls it the script. Everybody has their own script. And that script, they believe, is written for them. And if they don't really realize that that script can be changed, then they'll just keep repeating the same script over and over and over. So I believe that's very similar to what you're talking about as far as the interpretations.
Absolutely.
Going forward, because you defend your script just like you defend your interpretations.
That's very true. And I know Tom Mickler well, and I really appreciate his feedback and input as well. And so kind of in this way of defending our interpretations, if you defend yours and I defend mine and we see things differently, all that results in is conflict. Conflict is not helpful to you or I in a learning process. It's not helpful in a relationship process. And it's definitely not helpful in moving forward out of where you might currently be in your life.
Correct. Just like it's not helpful in our political arena right now, too.
Agreed. Wholeheartedly. So if this is the part that I want to lead into this conversation with today, is that if Bruce and I understood money the same way that you do as listeners, we would believe exactly the same way that you believe. If I understood money the same way as anybody else, I would believe exactly what they believed. So our question is, would you like to know what else is possible? And so that's the dialogue of saying, how can we allow ourselves to step into someone else's script for a moment? And so today we're not talking about the ultimate truth of money, because I don't know if there is an ultimate truth or one that can be known by anyone. We certainly don't propose to say we have all the answers and we know everything there is to know. And I really want to make sure that that is abundantly clear as we share, that we want to come from a position of talking about our principles and our beliefs and our philosophy in terms of how we see money working effectively for us and for our clients, and invite you into exploring how that feels to you as well. So Bruce, is there anything you want to share before I kind of dive into the snippet from someone who's really influenced my perspective?
No, I was actually excited in the anticipation of you sharing this for our listeners.
Awesome. Well, for some of you who may or may not know, John Butcher is the creator of Lifebook. Look it up. It's a wonderful organization. He's a fabulous person. He shares something profound about money that I want to invite you to listen to today, as this is going to direct the rest of our conversation. So here are John Butcher's words. Just want to be clear that I'm not creating this on my own. This is John Butcher's words. Money is not evil. Many of us are taught that money, or the love of money, is the root of all evil. This belief is a major emotional hurdle for many people. To claim that the love of anything is evil, that is a terribly frightening assertion, especially when pursuing money in one way or another is how most of us spend most of our waking hours, and all of us would like to have more money. It's pretty messed up to be pursuing what you've been taught is evil. Many people associate wealth with greed and selfishness. Rich people are viewed with resentment, not just because of what they have, but because also we are suspicious of who they hurt to get their wealth. Many of us assume that you have to take advantage of people to get wealthy, and yet pretty much everyone wants to be rich. It's a huge philosophical and cultural disconnect, and it creates a tremendous amount of angst in our society. Should we really be surprised? I mean, we are not really taught anything meaningful or serious about money in school. What it actually is, how to make it, or how to manage it. I mean, these things are not addressed during a standard 12-year American education. Here's the problem. Most of us go to school for more than 12 years, for 15 or even 20 years, and we learn about dozens of subjects, everything imaginable, everything but money, and then we graduate and we spend most of our waking hours every day for the rest of our lives trying to make money, a subject we learn nothing about in school. Can any of you relate to that? Because I know I can. Should it really be a wonder to us that so many people are overwhelmed by this category of life and perpetually underperforming? Should it be a mystery to us that most people have serious money problems, that they are up to their eyebrows in debt? They've got so much angst around this category. I mean, financial problems among couples are a leading cause of divorce, poverty, which is nothing but a lack of money. Sorry, let me rephrase that. A leading cause of divorce and poverty, which is nothing but lack of money, and also a leading cause of crime. We know deep down that we need money to live a good life, but we're so incredibly confused and bewildered by it, and in some cases, we're even afraid of it. What if you were taught at a very young age, that money is not the root of all evil, but that rather money is a symbol of human productivity and human achievement? What money represents is all the good things that people create for each other, and that it's absolutely worthy of your respect and admiration. Pretty crazy thought, right? What if you'd been taught at a young age that the love of money is really the love of the human mind, the love of production, of progress, and of freedom? What if you'd been taught that wealth and prosperity are literally what eliminate poverty and human suffering in the world, and that making money equals not some kind of spiritual defect, but can actually be the highest form of contribution when you get it right? What if at an early age these concepts had been proven to you, not just taught theoretically, but actually proven to you in the real world, and you had been encouraged by everyone around you to develop and apply your unique talents to the creation of wealth by creating immense value for the people around you? I mean, if it had been your financial premise all along, your financial belief, how might your life be different now? If your children grew up believing that, how would their lives be different? And how would the world we live in right now be understood if we acted on those principles?
Yeah, that's a great synopsis. Yes. What I found, Rachel, you know that I was in education for 17 years. I tell people I'm still in education. I just get to teach willing adults now. But I did have this idea that I had an economics course when I was in high school, and it consisted, and I'm not really exaggerating here, it really consisted about how a passbook savings account worked. Many listeners might not even know what a passbook savings account is. And it talked about compounding interest, and it talked about how to write a check. I do not remember anything else that it taught us. And I had always thought when I was teaching, I would often get in money discussions with some of my students, and I was amazed when they didn't even know what car insurance was, why it was even available, that you actually had to go somewhere or contact somebody to turn on the electricity in your home to pay for that. They didn't understand that when you bought a stock, people often say that you're investing in the company, but you really are speculating when you buy a stock. The only time you're investing in a company is on the initial public offering, because the company doesn't get an. I think this is really important for the listeners right now, because this is something that woke me up several years ago, because people say, yeah, I invest in the stock market. And I say, you do? Tell me how you invest in the stock market. Well, I bought $10,000 worth of Apple stock, so now I invested in Apple. Well, see, Apple doesn't get that money anymore. They haven't gotten any money since their initial public offering, or if they release some more stock. All you did was speculate, and you trade it with somebody that wanted to actually sell their stock. So Apple didn't get any more money. So I don't know how you can call that an investment into the company. You're simply speculating on the stock price. I mean, I think I'm a pretty smart guy, and I've been in the financial service industry for 12 years, and we always talked about investment into the stock market. And I got to realize that, you know, if maybe along the way I was educated at a younger age about how some of these things work, I wouldn't use the word investment when I was talking to people about the purchase of a stock. So those are the things I think what this excerpt from John Butcher's book, Money Is Not Evil, is talking about. And the last thing that I'd like to add to this conversation before we get into the conversation guide that you use with your clients is, I'm amazed in our society right now where we're talking about the haves and the have-nots, and that the people that have money should pay more of their fair share. And there's an outrage and basically an idea that it's their basic human right that people have a redistribution of wealth. And so they want people that over a certain income level to actually pay their fair share. When in fact, and I'm not going to get into specifics, and I don't want to get into a political discussion here, but the fact of the top 1% and 10% of the people pay well over 66% of all the taxes that we pay in the United States. And there's an outrage that we should be helping our citizens in a more even keel basis. However, if a family of four is making between $30,000 and $40,000, I can see where that's very difficult for them to get by. But if you would take them into the entire context of the world, having $30,000, $40,000 a year of money pass through their hands, they would be in the top 1% of the world. And I'm wondering why those same people don't have the outrage to say, well, I need to pay my fair share to people of poverty, whether it is in parts of Africa or parts of Afghanistan or parts of the Congo. I find that these things are all coming from, these beliefs are all coming from a lack of education. I really believe that a lot of people that we sit down with, Rachel, want us to sit down and tell them what to do. But that has actually gotten the problem even worse, because people are just wanting people to tell them what to do instead of educating themselves. At a time when education should be easier than ever, it's actually becoming harder than ever, because there's so much education out there that is conflicting, that people just stop educating themselves. So why don't you go ahead and run our audience through this conversation guide that helps people educate themselves and get and gain some clarity on beliefs about money that people hold.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate a lot that you just shared there as well, Bruce. And I think through our conversation, we're going to come back to that idea of education and how that really, truly is empowering. I want to mention here that as kind of Bruce, you mentioned that piece about people wanting to be told what to do. I feel that that's intellectually dishonest when we look to someone or something outside of ourselves to validate our choices. It's almost absolving our responsibility. And what instead we want to do is figure out how to be equipped so that we can have that ownership so that we can truly be in control of what our financial destiny is, because that's empowering to anyone. Again, this is when you feel confident and competent in an area of your life, that does deal away with the scarcity mindset, helps you be able to move forward. And then you're able to create that abundance in your life and be able to give more to others as well. So I kind of want to talk here about all of us come with these beliefs about money. What are some of the beliefs that you may have about money, or maybe that you've heard, or sometimes these come even from perspectives that our parents have because of what they've been through in their life, or we just hear statements that other people make where we realize that there's a mindset behind what they're saying. So maybe you've heard of some of these things before, things like money doesn't grow on trees, or we can't afford that, or money's evil, or rich people are ruthless. Now, you may not necessarily identify with those words, but has there been in your life maybe a story where you questioned someone's integrity because they were wealthy, or you thought, or you watched a movie, or heard another story play out where you recognize that these beliefs were the mindset of the person sharing the story and it came out through the way that they shared the story with you? Bruce, what are some other beliefs that maybe you've seen, or what's your experience with some of those limiting beliefs that we all come from in our money journey and our money story?
Well, one of the things you hear people say all the time is you have to spend money to make money. And I think that gives people permission to make poor decisions. The other thing is when I hear a person come in and they do not like their financial situation, and it's often because they lost money in a stock market venture, they say, well, everybody lost money, so I understand how that works. You know, the stock market goes up and the stock market goes down. So everybody lost money, so I understand that. And I said, well, actually, everybody doesn't lose money because not everybody does put money into the stock market. There are other places, alternative places to put your money. What you're really looking for, and this is the mindset change that I think people need to understand, is that if you build value in a person's life, whether it's Jeff Bezos making it easy for people to purchase products online so that they don't have to spend time going to a store, and they can spend time doing other things, whether it's with their own business or with their family or doing things around the house. When you build tremendous value in a person's life, you get repaid by people trading their money for their time. And that is the value that people should see that money brings them. But people don't see it like that. I agree. And actually, you're right. Hollywood depicts this. Television depicts this, magazine articles depict this, and I see some of our business owners that are actually trying to justify that in their lives too. I just was sitting down with a business owner last night, and she said, I know I shouldn't have taken my family out last night, because when we go out, every time we go out, it's $100, and it's $100 that I could have used by her a new pair of shoes, which I think she really needs. And I just simply said, now, did you actually have some value from going out last night? And she goes, yes, because I felt like that I was working in my business too much. I wasn't seeing my girls and my son. So this was a way that we could all connect last night. And I said, so really that $100 didn't just buy you food. It bought you connection within your family, an emotional connection with your family. But she was seeing that as $100 flowing out of her control as being something evil. She even said we could have went to a cheaper restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people, my father had a gas station growing up, and people thought that, and Rachel, this is how much older I am than you. I can remember when gas was 19 cents a gallon.
I can remember 58 cents, but not 19.
But in my influential days, what I'm talking about, it was 29 cents. And then we had the oil embargo in the mid 70s. And then when gas would go up 3 or 4 cents, which was, you know, a 10% jump when you're talking 29 cents, I can still remember as a young boy of 12, 13 years old, some of the customers, you know, they were making a joke with my father, but you could tell they weren't really joking. They would say, oh boy, I guess you're making all kinds of money this month because, you know, gas went up. Mm-hmm. And what they didn't realize, my father, you know, he really, to even keep his profit levels up, he should have raised the gas 5 or 6 cents a gallon, but he was actually keeping it lower to try to add value to the community's lives. But they were actually making fun of him and making him feel bad. And of course, that's what money does to people. It actually can make you feel bad if you let it. So those are kind of some of the things I think are common beliefs about that people hold about money.
That's awesome that you shared that. And I think that leads really well into some of the beliefs about money in abundance and prosperity that can really lead us to creating more money and living out this abundant life, not just in our money, but in every area of our life. And so we realize that money is connected to everything. When our health is going well, we know that we can produce more in our business. When our family relationships are solid and we feel great about them, we have a different kind of joy that we can bring to our clients. When we feel great about the client interaction we have, we bring a different kind of energy into the family dinner discussion. And so as everything is connected, money is really underlying so much of that, that we want to make sure that we have the money part right. And so I want to start by talking about that one idea that dollars follow value. I want to highlight that as an actual principle of money and wealth creation. And the reason for that is that you were talking about, Bruce, this creating value with Jeff Bezos, the stories that you just shared, and even with your dad, realizing that money is not really a thing. Money is not the true value. Really, it's about people and this interaction that we have between two people. When value is exchanged, when I serve you or you serve me in some capacity, money can be a certificate of that exchange of value. It certifies that, yes, we did in fact, provide value to the other person. But value has to happen first. It's not just about the money in the world. And so I wanted to share that as a result of your story, but then also helping all of us in the Money Advantage community to really use that as a peg, almost a flag in the ground, that we will focus on providing value and have dollars flow into our lives as a result of that. So that was kind of a recap on what you shared. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about with dollars following value?
Well, I think the obvious thing where you said that money isn't about the value is that our money is what they call fiat money. It's really not even worth anything. It's worth what people believe it's worth. So really, the exchange of money is what you're just exchanging for the value that you're providing that person. So if there was another way of exchanging that value, and you know there is in somewhat in barter systems, mm-hmm. If you could exchange time with people, that's another way. But we exchange money for time, or time for money. So no, I think you hit on those principles very, very well.
That's awesome. I wanted to bring another one to light here, and that's principles first and strategies second. I can see countless times in my own life, in conversations with clients, and in the going opinions on things, that it can be very easy to hold strongly to a strategy or a technique or a tactic of how to accomplish something. But we really want to understand, what are we trying to accomplish from a principle perspective first? So when we understand the principles about money, then we can figure out what strategy meets this need. So if the principle is we want to create abundance and have cash flow into our lives, we can talk about the strategy maybe for paying off our loans in order to help accomplish the cash flow need. But if we make paying off debt if we make that strategy in terms of how we pay off debt into something that we hold so dearly and call it a principle in our lives, we can become misguided having a strategy that we're holding to as opposed to the principle. And so I've actually seen that in my own life. We were having a conversation with my daughter last night. We all as humans have needs. We sometimes fill those needs with different types of tactics. And so for me, recognizing that her desire to play a game on the computer is a need for her to fulfill, or it's a way for her to fulfill this need of play, I can help her then maybe develop a different strategy to satisfy her need for play, as opposed to doing the thing that maybe is not appropriate at the time, or maybe not the best use of our time, or maybe something that I would really rather her engage with me or neighborhood kids, or really be able to build her social skills in a different way. And so it happens in our parenting lives, and it happens in our diet. But specifically, as we're talking about money, we want to know what the principles are and then develop strategies afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So like the principle that I believe in, I think you believe, is about control of money.
Yes.
But then the strategy that a lot of people use is to pay off their house because they feel like they'll be in more control of their lives if they don't have a mortgage payment. But in fact, as they pay the house off, and in most cases, they're actually giving $100 more a month or doubling their house payment, they're actually losing control of money. So the principle is that they want to gain control of life. I'm sorry, the strategy is that they want to gain control of money, but the principle does not follow that because they're actually giving up control of money. I often talk to business owners, and when I do consultations with them, and we talk about working in your unique ability, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in one of our future broadcasts. I say to them, now we need to trade some of your money for time so that you work in your unique ability. And this was an actual conversation I had about 6 months ago. I was talking to a business owner, and I said, you need to get an assistant so you can take the day-to-day operations of actually paying your bills, your accounting, so on and so forth, because that will free you up to do more sales. He said, well, how much do you think that will cost? I said, well, I think it'll be about $30,000. And he said, I don't see where I have $30,000 to spend on that right now. Of course, I knew he did because I knew his financial picture. Then I said to him, in a very different way, I said, okay, let's say you don't have an assistant, but you were able to do those things efficiently so that you spent very little time on that. So now you freed up that extra 10 hours a week to actually produce more business. How much more business could you produce in a month? And you know what the figure he said to me? Oh, I could produce $30,000 more of revenue a month if I could give that up. Yeah, his strategy was not congruent with his principles. His principle was, he saw $30,000 was an outflow that he did not want to have happen. But the strategy to make sure that the outflow did not happen was causing him to actually not add value into other clients' life to actually improve his revenue stream. So those are just a couple of examples of the difference in principles and strategies.
That's a great story. And I like how that actually meets another one of the principles, is that fear and faith cannot coexist. And this is really when we're talking about scarcity and abundance. When we are making decisions and moving forward in this position of clarity and faith and confidence, we don't have fear about our financial life. But if we are just looking at money as limited, I'm going to combine a couple different principles together here. So fear and faith cannot coexist. That's another one. But also, wealth is limitless. And if we know that we can create value by how we spend our time and how we use our unique ability and how we choose to run our business, maybe what systems and processes we put in place, we're creating more value for more people, which dollars follow value. And now we're creating wealth that's limitless. And so if we can think differently from a different level and a different perspective, like you shared with the business owner, you can create more by releasing the things that are not adding value to people in the way that you spend your time. And so wealth is truly limitless when it's, when we think of it as based on how much value can I create in the world. I think one of the other principles that I just want to bring forward as we're wrapping up here on the principles of living our money life in a way that leads to abundance and prosperity is really that reaching your full potential requires full responsibility. We can't have an entitlement mindset or a belief that somebody owes us something or that we deserve to have better than we do right now. It's a challenging thing to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, I have created the life that I have at this given time. And if it's not where I want it to be, how can I grow and expand my abilities? How can I more effectively serve people so that I can be in a position that I can create the life that I want? And so taking that responsibility and that ownership really on ourselves allows us then the freedom to learn and to grow, as opposed to staying stuck in a victim mindset. Mm-hmm. Bruce, is there anything you'd like to share about that?
Well, I actually talk to people very quickly when I have an initial meeting with them, whether it's a business owner or it's a individual. And I say, if you think that we can take full responsibility for your financial lives, then we're not a good fit. What we're going to do is give you the education for you to take responsibility for your financial lives. And that's what we were talking about in the last podcast. The education creates confidence, the confidence creates action, and the action creates trust. So I think that's a very good point. I know you wanted to bring out the principles of prosperity in this broadcast, and
yes.
You might want to fill the listeners in about where those came from and how you and I both agree with not only the principles, but also the organization, which is Partners for Prosperity. And I was actually part of a mastermind on these principles with the Partners for Prosperity just about a month ago. And we all agreed that we were going to share these with as many business owners and individuals as possible.
That's awesome. And that's a wonderful lead in. So the principles of prosperity are 7 principles that I learned from Kim Butler, who has created Partners for Prosperity. And she is educating people to really be able to take control of their financial life. She's also the leader, the prime leader of the prosperity economics movement. Bruce and I both have personal relationship with Kim Butler and are part of the prosperity economics movement. And we see it as our mission to be able to share these principles, to use them not only in our own lives, but in our practice, to be able to help clients walk out these principles of prosperity. And so I'm going to go ahead and share them. And then Bruce, if you would like to comment as well, just go ahead and let me know. So number one is thinking from a prosperous mindset to make better decisions. We know that when we think from a position of abundance and value creation and limitlessness that we were just talking about, that we can make clearer minded decisions. When we have that clarity that comes from abundance and being at rest and at peace, we're not in scarcity and fear, we absolutely will be able to move forward and not end up shooting ourselves in the foot with the choices that we make financially. Number two is seeing the big picture and how everything fits together. And this is really important because a lot of times we find that people, we all have this tendency to compartmentalize everything in our lives, and specifically finances. We'll see as this money is meant to be for retirement, and this is for my college planning, and this is my house that I'm paying off, and this is my credit card debt, and this is my income. And we think of it as these different pieces that are somehow disjointed. But really the big picture is all of your money is this part of your personal economy, and it all is flowing together and influencing and impacting each other. All of the elements are working together. And so a decision to save money a certain way impacts your ability to pay off a loan. And your decision about how you spend your income determines whether you will go on vacation or not. There's just so many different pieces that are all working together. And so seeing the big picture allows us to really look at it as a whole and not as separate parts. Do you want to add anything to that piece there, Bruce?
No, I think this all comes down to mindset, not focusing on the details. And that comes back to unique ability that we're going to talk about in the future, and understanding that everybody's unique ability will look at the big picture, and then you will fit that in together. And I'm not just talking about for a entrepreneur's business, but also for people's own personal economy, how everybody in the family works together.
That's excellent. Number three is to measure cost and opportunity cost of financial decisions and capital. This opportunity cost is something that is we're often blind to it because it's not always something that's seen. But we want to understand that if we make certain decisions, what are the long-term impacts over the course of our life of making that choice? For instance, if I use $30,000 of capital to pay off a loan, I no longer have that $30,000 in my control to be able to use and create interest or earn interest with. That's an opportunity cost of that decision. An opportunity cost of keeping a loan is that you're going to pay the interest on that loan. So it's thinking not only about the actual expense, but the opportunity cost and what could have been produced had you kept that money.
I had a client one time tell me, oh, does that simply mean the money I can make on my money? And I'm like, yeah, I guess that's a very simpler way of saying it instead of opportunity cost loss. It's just the money you could have made on your money.
That's very, very easy way to understand that. Thank you for sharing that. Number four is flow. This is identifying instruments that produce cash flow. Now, we all know that the ultimate goal of our lives is to have cash flow. If we had cash flow coming from something other than our job, we would be able to retire and not have to depend on that job as a source of W-2 income to us. The goal ultimately of retirement planning that we see people doing is not necessarily to get to a certain accumulation dollar amount, but it's to have a certain amount of cash flow for living expenses in that season of their life. And so if we can recognize that our cash flow needs are extremely important, we need to honor the need for cash flow in our financial life, we can think differently then about what decisions we can make that will increase our cash flow, not only in the future, but also right now in the here and now today.
Business owners, we talk about this all the time because they say, well, I want to put more money away for my future because I don't want to be doing this the rest of my life. And I say, well, first of all, then you're not in the right, you don't own the right business. You're just a business owner. You're not an entrepreneur. You are actually working in your business and you're not building a self-sustaining business. So when we talk about when they all of a sudden, either they've already accumulated money or they're want to accumulate money or they come into a transfer of money through a state transfer, such as a relative dying, we say instead of just using that accumulated money for future purposes, why don't we put it into vehicles, alternative investments that can actually kick you some cash flow off right now, and you can use that cash flow to actually either increase and do the things you want to do with your family, or you can actually do it to actually expand your business. So not just sitting on that money for future, but actually having it flow cash to you. This is a really important concept, I think, for businesses to prosper is not to sit on their money, but to actually look at the opportunity for that money to provide cash flow for you.
That's awesome. And I think the one thing that I learned from Robert Kiyosaki that was extremely valuable is that need for cash flow. And yes, if we can create something that's producing cash flow today, then that cash flow adds to your daily income. And that's something that can begin your financial independence now, as opposed to waiting for another 30 years before you reach that economic independence. Number five is also one of my favorites. Cash flow and control are really my two primary favorites here, I think. But control is really having money where you don't have constrictions and limits on your money. This really means, can I use it? Is it something that I have access to? Is it something that is not at risk of dropping in value? Is it something that I can get to if I want it? Now, this could mean I am using this money, I control it, so I don't have the possibility of it losing value in the stock market or some other place where it could lose money. It's something that I can count on in the future. So if I have control of my money, then I have confidence because I know it's going to be there for me in the future. That confidence then ties back and leads back into my ability to think from a prosperous mindset. But then if I can use that money, I can possibly borrow against it or take out some of that capital and be able to put it to work for me because I have control. That control then gives me confidence, which also gives me a greater set of choices and options for what I want to do with my money. Mm-hmm. It expands the set of options available to me. I want to talk then about moving. This is principle number five, is move. Get money moving through various financial vehicles, not in an environment that they can do only one thing. And this is kind of like if you imagine a river flowing, and if it flowed into a reservoir and became stagnant, that would be murky and muddy and probably turn into a swamp and have algae growing on top and not be healthy for drinking or swimming in. But if it was money that continued to flow and move like a river, you would have this fresh water that you could always be able to access. And so in the same way that we can think about money flowing or sitting stagnant, the same way as water, if you can have money that moves through one asset into another asset, you can possibly accomplish two purposes at the same time, rather than just saying this money is only to be used for one thing. So again, it's congruent and connected over with seeing from a big picture. If I say this money is only for my kids' college, this money is only for vacation, this money is only for retirement, then it's not moving, it's just sitting. Bruce, is there anything that you want to add to that?
I think the greatest example of this is what our government does with tax dollars. So when I provide value, somebody pays me, I actually have to pay taxes on that dollar. Then when I go and take my money and go purchase another thing that I think has value, that particular business owner who sells me that product or service has to pay taxes on that same dollar that's going through his hand. Then he actually buys product or services from somebody else, and he takes that dollar and passes it through their hands, and they actually have to pay taxes on that. And then that person is actually either producing the raw resources and he buys it from somebody else, and they're actually getting revenue and they have to pay tax dollars on that. So that money is flowing throughout the system and it's producing revenue for the government. The same thing can happen in your own personal life if you do not let your money just sit and be stagnant.
That's called the velocity of money too, is another word for that same thing. So yes, the number of times you can get it going through your personal economy, you are able then to do much more with it. So as opposed to holding onto it and hoarding it, like I talked about, I had done in my past financial life on the last episode, getting it to move and be put to use is much more effective for us, which then accomplishes principle number seven, which is multiply, getting your money to multiply. And this means that your money is not just the dollar being $1. It's how can we turn that dollar into $2? And how can we turn those $2 into $4? And how can we get it doing more jobs for you so that you can accomplish not only financial independence today, but be able to ride through your life on the various mountain peaks that you're going to have through the highs and lows of the rest of your life and for generations to come, creating a true legacy. Is there anything else that you'd like to add there, Bruce?
No, I like the legacy aspect of it. Robert Hughes is a great book. And what he talks about is that money actually passes through to three generations. It actually dissipates and disappears. So there are ways to get that money to multiply. I think as we wrap this up today, the main thing that our audience may be thinking is, you know, all these things are great and you want to help me change my mindset and maybe give us permission to think differently. But how are we actually going to accomplish that? And we're going to have specifics. And I think things were brought about today that were specifics. But we like to use the word, it depends. What does it depend upon? It depends on your own personal business and financial personal economy. So this is a great time, I think, Rachel, to talk about what you'd like to give our listeners today to help them through that process of wealth acceleration with the curriculum that you prepared for them, and tell our listeners how they can get that.
Absolutely. So in order to be able to start applying some of these principles that we've talked about today and think through your money mindset so you can really create this firm foundation for your own financial freedom, we'd like to give you a copy of a portion of the first chapter of my Wealth Acceleration curriculum. And so that chapter is titled Firm Foundation. And you again can grab the link in the show notes or over on our website at www.themoneyadvantage.com. So also on our website, I'll say that again, themoneyadvantage.com, you can subscribe to our podcast. You can also join the Money Advantage community and get emails about our podcasts, blogs, videos, and any tools that will be helpful to you. From our website, you can also follow us on social media, Facebook, and YouTube. If there's any particular questions that you have about this concept or anything else we've talked about, we'd love to hear from you. Reach out to us at hello@themoneyadvantage.com and be able to share your thoughts, feedback, or any particular questions you have about anything we've discussed or even touched on today. Also available is a free financial picture conversation with Bruce or I that will help you discover dollars flowing into and out of your control, strategize ways to get more dollars flowing into your control so that the end result is having more money to retain and utilize during your lifetime and more to pass on to future generations. We really appreciate you listening to this podcast today, and we hope you found it educational, inspiring, empowering, and that it really added value to your life and business. So again, this is Bruce and Rachel. Special thanks to you, our listeners, and we can't wait to come back and share another topic on the next podcast very soon. Until then, build a life and business you love.
To learn how high-performing entrepreneurs 10x or more returns on liquid capital without giving up quick access to cash, go to themoneyadvantage.com/liquid-capital to get The Unfair Advantage, your 20-minute, easy-to-read guide on maximizing your savings.
Thank you for listening to the Money Advantage podcast. Today's show notes and resources are available for you on themoneyadvantage.com. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review. If you have any questions or desire to speak with a qualified financial professional after listening to today's podcast, we encourage you to reach out to us at hello@themoneyadvantage.com or check us out at themoneyadvantage.com. The opinions and views expressed here are for informational purposes only. This material is educational in nature and should not be deemed as a solicitation of any specific product or service. All investments involve risk and a potential loss of principal. Kalos Capital Incorporated nor Kalos Management Incorporated offer tax or legal advice. Please consult with a tax advisor or attorney for advice regarding the impact on your portfolio. Securities offered through Kalos Capital Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC, MSRB, and investment advisory services offered through Kalos Management Incorporated and registered investment advisor, both located at 11525 Parkwood Circle, Alpharetta, Georgia. E3 Consultants Group is not an affiliate or subsidiary of Kalos Capital Incorporated or Kalos Management Incorporated.